And welcome to EG's Future of Southampton event. I'm Tim Burke, EG's deputy editor, and over the course of today's panels and interviews, we'll be exploring how the city, its residents, its businesses, and its leaders are responding to the difficulties of the COVID-19 pandemic, while also positioning and perhaps repositioning the city for what may come next. Thanks to our series partner, Savills, as well as partners Shoesmiths, ACOM, Southampton City Council, and the support of ACES on today's event. Later in the programme, we'll also take a look at the city's green goals and how sustainability is reshaping the work of real estate. But in this opening discussion, we're going to explore the recovery period as cities like Southampton attempt to look beyond the COVID-19 pandemic and the ways in which our experiences of recent months will reshape how we design and use the built environment. With the return of social restrictions this week, how will Southampton adapt to the new demands on the city? To tackle these questions, I'm joined by Nick Jones, head of the Southampton office at ACOM, Gavin Hall, a director in the planning team at Savills, Joe McGuinness, a partner in the real estate division at Shoesmiths, and Megan Streb, partnerships manager at the charity Sustrans. Thank you all for being here with EG. Events are obviously moving quickly, and as I mentioned, we have new restrictions being introduced just this week. But Gavin, could I ask you to set the scene for us, first of all, in terms of how you've seen Southampton and its real estate industry respond to the events of the year so far?
Yes, absolutely. So clearly, kind of in March, beginning of lockdown, at the end of March, the beginning of lockdown, things went quite quiet initially, but as lockdown kind of started easing, inquiries for offices in particular started picking up again. There's been a bit of a lull in the last 2 weeks in August, but it's now starting to pick up again. I think that's kind of people having a holiday before we get into the autumn and everything else. Industrial and logistics demand has been really strong, partly due to all of the requirement for online retailing. So that's really kind of picked up in the local area, and there's been some rather large deals. So 120,000 square foot was pre-let at Dunsbury Park in Havant, and Alpha Park Chandler's Ford, we've had 84,000 square foot has been recently taken. So there's been demand, rents have been staying high. In terms of other markets, residential, we obviously found there was a bit of uncertainty, would deals continue, but actually, I think there's only one or two of our residential deals actually fell through as a result of lockdown. Everything else has kind of continued. We're seeing properties now. There's an awful lot, as you drive around, there's an awful lot of properties on the market now that probably are the glut from the previous months. And levels are staying high. I think there's maybe a more difficulty for first-time buyers to get mortgages. But apart from that, things still seem to be strong. Obviously, the legislation changes that the government brought in terms of stamp duties helped as well. So there's been a push from that. I think the one area that's going to be really interesting to see what happens as time progresses is the more town centre uses. So hotels, retail, restaurants, cafes, bars, arts as well. So obviously we've seen the loss of one theatre in Southampton so far. I think we are looking to try and see if that can be retained in some shape or form. But there's clearly going to be, as we kind of progress through this, I think some further casualties in terms of the kind of leisure and entertainment sector, and the retail sector is going to be changing. And, you know, I think some of the more recent legislational changes that the government have already brought in will help to support that, which I can talk about a bit later on as well, in terms of supporting town centres.
Joe, does that chime broadly with what you're seeing? What kind of work is keeping the real estate team at Shoesmiths busy?
Well, it's varied and very similar, a very similar pattern. What's quite interesting, though, is a lot of the work has been around landlords and tenants agreeing rent concessions, rent reductions. I think that, and some landlords being very accommodating with retailers and those in the sort of hospitality arena, and other landlords taking a fairly strict approach, but generally there does seem to be in a spirit of collaboration between landlords and tenants, because obviously it's tough for both, with the investment market and also with the retail market. So that's a lot of our work has been centered around those sort of arrangements, but it has been pretty much business as usual, really, particularly with landlord-tenant work for in the logistics, industrial, and in the retail sector. You know, the work has still been going on, but probably we haven't seen as many new large acquisitions or project-led transactions, and that's primarily due to funding, and that may change in the next few months. But I think, you know, particularly in the last few months, I think with the a majority of the businesses taking annual leave or trying to take their 8/12 of their annual leave by the end of August, that's been quite slowed things down, I think, quite a lot, particularly in August when everybody took advantage of basically took the holidays in August. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how things fare this month and in going into October.
How are we seeing high streets reshaped by this crisis? Gavin, you've touched on some of the casualties that we've seen, and obviously there are huge challenges ahead, not just for retail, but for a variety of hospitality-focused businesses. What do you think Southampton is taking away from its experiences over recent months in terms of how a high street should operate, what it should be offering the communities that it serves?
Sure. I think, I mean, if you look in Southampton, there's been some changes made immediately to Bedford Place. So one of the kind of streets where there's quite a kind of community already focused around that location. A lot of bars, restaurants, small independent retailers. And they've actually taken away a lot of the on-street parking to provide outdoor seating protected by kind of flowers and hedges and things like that, to try and kind of landscaping, to try to kind of soften the street and actually to make people feel comfortable. And that has certainly worked, and is, I think, something we will see more of. Right at the beginning of this, there were some studies and some articles written about, you know, how we will see on-street parking disappear and more street cafes, and, you know, it can be done further afield in more colder northern European countries. So why not in Southampton as well, and the rest of the UK? So I think that will continue. I think there's an awful lot of new technology that we've tested, we've realised actually works quite well, helps some of the users make it more efficient. So making orders from your table is fine. I think the retailers, I think there's probably also been a bit more of a focus to shopping locally and shopping at home. So maybe not in the city centre itself, but I think I personally think there may be a bit of a resurgence to some of the more local district centres, where, you know, there was a huge concern previously about the death of the high street before COVID. And actually, I think now people are working from home more often. So, you know, they're probably actually about and going to their local chemist at lunchtimes, or going to the local shop at lunchtime and doing some of that shopping in a bit more of a fluid way than working in the office 9 to 5, coming home and then going to a large supermarket at the weekend, or, you know, going doing all the shopping at the weekend. I think that will continue. I think for the city centre, though, for the big retail city centre above bar and that sort of thing, I think there's going to be difficulty. I think people will want to shop. People like going into shops. I think as some of the restrictions ease and people can browse, I think that will help. What will be interesting, though, is whether or not will we start seeing cafes and restaurants actually taking some of the larger retail units that might kind of become available, so that they can actually allow more indoor seating, socially distanced and everything else. So I think there will be changes, but I think, you know, it'll be over time, and I think as people change. But I think there'll be a lot more use of the outdoor space, which I think is great. You know, a city like Southampton does have a lot of sun, does have a lot of pavement that can be used. And I think, you know, we probably are going to see lots of online on-street parking spaces in favour of using that more effectively and actively.
Megan, how does this tie into the work that Sustrans is doing? And how are you seeing active travel trends play out within Southampton?
So certainly nationally, I think I'd echo that comment about district centres. We've been doing a lot of work on 20-minute neighbourhoods. And we've certainly, I mean, just looking out my front door, I've been seeing a lot more people walking. And a lot of that, especially in the height of lockdown, you know, that was to do the local shopping, and that seems to have continued. I think what we need to make sure is that it receives the investment that I think for a long time city centers have had. You know, it, a lot of our district centers, not just in Southampton, they need a bit of a facelift. You know, they need to feel a bit more loved in order to make sure that they represent the neighborhoods where people want to live. And I think that would also support the recruitment and retention of the high skilled people that we want to have in Southampton. I think also in terms of active travel trends, we certainly saw during lockdown, and again, maybe you guys saw it looking out your windows, a lot more what I would call wobbly cyclists. You know, people getting it out of the shed, probably haven't been on it for a while. And just giving it a go, you know, and I think I've seen a lot more families out and about, and not just on the quieter streets. I think the pop-up cycle routes, certainly when I've been on them, I've seen people that I wouldn't, you know, don't fit the kind of cyclist stereotype going out and about and using it. I think it'll also be really interesting to see once the students are fully back, especially if a lot of them are having less contact time at the uni, how are they choosing to kind of get to and from their housing and their classes? I think that cycling especially is going to be really key to that.
How would you expect to see that reflected in the work of the real estate industry, in what urban planners are thinking about as they perhaps design new areas of public realm? How do we need to see these behavioral changes reflected within the built environment?
I think certainly we need to see the facilities at both ends. You know, we need to make sure that whether people live in a terraced house or a flat, they have access to secure cycle storage. And we also need to make sure that our office buildings, as we've seen growing, you know, whether it's large places outside Reading Station or in offices all over London, I've seen a growing number who are advertising their cycle facilities and their showers as a key amenity that they're offering in businesses that are going to be moving in. We know that that recruitment and retention is incredibly important. People want to feel that their employer is looking after them, and this is a really easy way to do it. So I think that's a big part of it. I think, as Gavin touched on, losing that on-street parking, it's a really inefficient way of using most of our streets. You know, streets make up about 80% of the public space that we have in cities. And so to use them just to kind of sit a vehicle there for hours and hours on end, unused, seems like a really bizarre way to organize what, you know, what space we do actually have in our cities. So I'm hoping to see better use of that space as part of that as well. And I think also, certainly in Southampton, we work on workplace engagement with all of the major employers in the city, representing, you know, tens of thousands of people. And they are concerned about their workforce, their well-being, their ability to get safely to work. A lot of people are still working from home, but as people start to come back into offices, you know, employers want to know that they can do that safely. And we've seen a lot of support from key businesses in terms of having more cycle facilities.
Nick, I'd be interested to get some thoughts from you on ACOM's take on the role of infrastructure within the recovery, and maybe some of your thoughts on what's front of mind at the moment for you and colleagues there in the Southampton office.
Sure. I mean, just picking up a couple of the points that have already been made, I think, you know, I'd agree that actually for us, workload hasn't tailed off at all during lockdown. In fact, you know, we've probably been busier in the last 6 months than we were in the 6 months before that. And a lot of that has been driven by the residential market for us. So, having talked to some of Gavin's colleagues and other kind of agents regionally, there's been a huge uptick in interest from people wanting to move out of London. They want bigger houses, bigger gardens, the fact that they're never going to go back to working 5 days a week in their office in London Bridge or Canary Wharf means that the 2 days a week they do have to go there, they don't mind an hour and a half's commute. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of interest from developers and investors looking for residential opportunities. And a slight shift. We've in the past probably month seen a large increase in thoughts and inquiries about PRS housing, which has always kind of been there in the background a bit, but that's probably been the most noticeable increase for us. In terms of us as an employer, today is the first day that we've opened our office again, so it's all still a bit new, a bit strange. Yeah, the biggest concern that our staff have are how they can safely get into the office. We have a fully compliant plan when they're in here, but actually, yeah, how can they get in? I mean, it's a few people cycle and walk. The majority of our staff traditionally have driven in, and the feedback we've had from them is that that's not going to change because they don't feel safe on public transport. A number of them have said that, yes, they will try more sustainable cycling, et cetera, et cetera. Although the majority of feedback was whilst the weather is good. So, there's been a reasonable amount of use of the pop-up cycle lanes in Southampton. Personally, I remain to be convinced that that will continue once we're into the wet and windy and cold and dark evenings. And also, from a personal perspective as a Southampton resident, there's been a couple of interesting things. The pop-up cycle lane on the avenue that subsequently been taken down, actually, to everyone that I spoke to, it had the opposite of the intended effect. Because it took out a lane of traffic, what it meant was overnight, traffic was completely gridlocked around Southampton. So the intention of actually reducing emissions, I think, went the other way. And friends of mine who are cyclists, they're saying they remain to be convinced as well about the more permanent lanes further down the avenue, because what they're already seeing is that those are becoming cluttered with debris and are not being cleaned properly. So they've said they're not going to be riding their £3,000 bikes down there because they're just going to get damaged. So I think there are some challenges, and I absolutely agree with the point about making sure we've got the right facilities. It was a challenge that I put at this event last year to the council about putting in the cycle lanes is great. Where are people going to securely park their bikes? Some of my staff who come over from the Isle of Wight, there are secure bike lockers down at Red Funnel. Just what happens every now and again, a couple of lads come along with a truck and bolt cropper. And cut off all the locks and steal all the bikes. So how do we deal with that kind of thing? And then one final point for me, I was over in Rome last week, and everywhere in Rome is electric scooters. And that seems to be a really, you know, easy way for people to get around. A lot of it was done on the kind of easy hire kind of methodology. We did have the bikes here in Southampton for a while, but I'd be interested to see how that might work in and around Southampton. Although learning lessons from Italy is making sure people know how to ride them.
I'd be interested to jump back to one of your early points. There was about the opportunity that comes when, let's say, a worker in Canary Wharf realizes that he's not going to be tied so closely to London if he doesn't need to be in the office for 5 days a week. What other opportunities might we see for cities such as Southampton if people start to rethink over the coming months and years the time they want to spend commuting, where they want to live versus where they want to work? How can what can regional cities grasp here if we see these sort of behavioural changes and lifestyle changes from people? Gavin, maybe some thoughts from you there.
Yeah, well, I think it's that kind of the fact that you're going to have a larger population kind of staying in the city or staying in the towns during the week more than you would have done previously. So, you know, if you think back to the days of the hundreds of thousands of people commuting up to London 5 days a week, you know, if 30% or 40% of those people are now actually stay at home during the week, there's more opportunity for, you know, after you've finished work. We found during lockdown a lot of people would, you know, a long day kind of in front of the computer on Zoom calls or everything else, people going out for walks, taking the dogs for a walk. There was a lot more people that you'd never see walking, never see cycling, never see running out on the streets. I think that sort of thing will continue. And that's where I think some of the, you know, subject to various restrictions, the things like the kind of cafes and bars and restaurants, you know, especially in locations like kind of the South Coast, where you can sit out by the water, look out to sea. And I think it helps your mental well-being massively. Mm. So I think there's going to be a huge opportunity for some of the businesses in not necessarily the city centres, but in the kind of town centres, the district centres on the coast, to actually start reaping the rewards from more people being about during the week. And, you know, also I think, you know, there's probably going to be a shift in commuting patterns, not just in numbers, but also times of days. You know, does everyone have to be in for 9 o'clock in the morning? You know, picking up on Nick's point about cycling and walking into work, in the winter when it gets darker earlier, you know, will we start seeing people coming in for half a day or something like that, a few days a week, and working from home a bit later on to be able to get it back home, that sort of thing. So I think there's going to be a change in how we live our lives. It's going to be more flexible. And I think, you know, I think it's going to be bestowed upon us all to actually start picking up some of the kind of positives that we can see from this, rather than just going back to the way we were. And I think there are a lot of opportunities. And I think, you know, that more flexible way of working, more flexible living, and actually making more use of the hours in the day rather than sitting on a train for 2 hours or 4 hours a day, could be really beneficial to someone like Southampton, not just because people are moving down here.
Joe, would you agree that there's almost a risk of going back to the way that things were pre-crisis and not perhaps learning some of the lessons that we're presented with as, I guess, as individuals, also as an industry?
I do think there is, actually. I think the flexible working is going to grow. I think people will want to go back into the office, but I don't think they want to go back full time. I think people still want to go back into cities, but there might be a demographic shift. There might be younger people more prepared to go back into cities to enjoy the hospitality in the cities. So I think I don't think we'll go back to what it was, and I think we'll go back to something much better. I do think there's a lot of work to be done around the cities to facilitate that, though. I would love to see in Southampton, for example, less cars in the city, more cycles, more cycle routes, more walking routes, you know, more outdoor, the outdoor space being used a lot better. I mean, Southampton itself, there's a lot of new developments, but it's a lot of it's flats, student housing, some fantastic developments. But I think it sort of needs it to be linked into actually use of the city itself with the parks, the waterfront. So I think things will change, and I think we change for the better, for sure.
What are some of your thoughts on the investment, particularly in terms of infrastructure, that the city needs most pressingly at the moment? Nick, I wonder if you could offer some thoughts on what you see as the clearest need for Southampton in terms of investment now.
I don't think it's anything new. I think it's the things that have been spoken about for a number of years. Certainly, rail connectivity between Southampton and Portsmouth. We've looked at that on a number of occasions as a business, and all the studies show that putting in some kind of parkway facility near Whiteley would probably take 25% of the traffic off the M27. So improving that east-west connectivity is a big one. I think Gavin's point is well made, that if 30%-ish of people are not going to be commuting to London every day, but actually if Network Rail do go on and do the things they say they're going to do in improving the signalling and the line up to London, so that Southampton to London becomes sub 1 hour rather than an hour and 15, hour and 20, then again, that just makes everyone that lives easier and makes it a very easy decision for those people in London Bridge and Canary Wharf to say, actually, yeah, I'm going to come and live on the South Coast, because actually it'd be quicker to get to Waterloo by train than it would be, you know, from the tube line. And then something around the connectivity within Southampton. Personally, I use them a reasonable amount. The buses are pretty good. They get a lot of use. The students were mentioned earlier. You know, the student population use them very well. it would be interesting to see a study that looks at expanding the bus routes. So, for instance, there is a pretty good east-west bus, but it only runs kind of two or three times a day. Would that get more use? I don't know. And then really the age-old thing about how do we keep cars out of the city centre. I know there's been lots of discussion about park and rides. There was the light rail link proposal between Eastleigh through the airport and down to Ocean Village. Unfortunately, technically, that wasn't possible to be implemented. But something around how we can get people quickly and efficiently, and very importantly, how it's easy for them to interact with those changes, to get them out of their cars, because you know public transport beyond the city centre is minimal to zero. So it's not easy for people to get in from the outskirts of Romsey, Chandler's Ford, Eastleigh. It's just not easy. So people will inherently still use cars until we can give them a good, cheap, usable, comfortable facility to get them out of their cars. And I still think that would need to be on the city edge.
Megan, I'm assuming this is all very much front of mind for you as well.
It is. Actually, I think probably the biggest thing we need is digital connectivity. And just to reflect all the changes that are happening, I think there is a lot of work that's happening at the moment in terms of increasing fiber around Southampton, but I'm keen to see that roll out across the city. And I do think that making the most of those short journeys, seeing what we can do in order to make that feel like a nicer option, again, around that 20-minute neighborhoods for the district centers, but also, you know, I absolutely agree with what everyone else has said about what do we want our city centers to feel like. I think we want them to be vibrant places where people can bump into each other outside of an office, or they can catch up with each other at a cafe. And I think, that congestion doesn't make anyone feel like this is a booming city. You know, maybe it did in 1967 when we were looking at images of the future of a city and loads of cars felt like economic success. But I think we've come a long way from that, you know, and I think there's a lot of other things that we're looking for what a good city looks like.
Yeah.
If I could just add to a point to that, I think the counter to that would be that if we just go down a route that says, let's get rid of cars without those proper alternatives for people to use, people will stop coming into the city centre and it will go into decline.
Absolutely. Absolutely agree.
And I think it'd be really interesting to see what happens with car parks in the city where, you know, if we're getting rid of on-street parking, there's a small car park beneath the office that both Savills and Dacom are in, but people are using on-street parking. In that kind of uncertainty about using trains or public transport, you know, there does need to be a recognition that we do need parking facilities, but in the right locations and connected properly, both in and out of the city.
Well, to draw this to a close on hopefully an optimistic note, I was going to ask each of you if you were able just to highlight one positive change that you think Southampton is able to take away from what have clearly been very difficult months. If we were to look for something that the built environment can take away from this crisis, what might that be? Joe, I wonder if I could ask for your thoughts first.
Well, I think living down here in the southeast is a wonderful place to live. I think there is so much on offer with the city centre, with what there is. I had a walk around yesterday in Southampton to remind myself, you know, what was happening in the latest developments, and just seeing the diversity of restaurants and bars and what the city centre have actually done to actually encourage people into the city centre. And I think with people working more flexibly, I do think they'll be looking for to enjoy the city centres, the sort of cultural aspects of the city, and also the environment around the city. So I think we may find actually that the city is regenerated because people don't want to do the commute and the travelling because of their fears of public transport and the intensity in the city centres in London, for example.
Excellent. Gavin, some thoughts, final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I think it's about social interaction that, you know, one of the things I used to say was before we got a dog, we lived at the end of a cul-de-sac and, you know, you used to get in your car, you drive out, didn't know your neighbours. As soon as we got a dog, we started taking the dog for a walk and you kind of start going out for walks, you meet your neighbours, you say hello. And I think, you know, that's, a lot of people have said the age of the office is dead. You know, a lot of people are saying people aren't going to go back to the offices, we can all work from home. Clearly, that's not happening. You know, offices are reopening. People are coming back in. People have missed being in the office. People have missed that social interaction. It probably will be at lower densities, but I think the use of the office will be for that interactive period, for that process, for people to meet, to talk. You know, young graduates to learn is really important for them to hear other people having conversations. So I think the built environment needs to kind of realise that actually what we need to learn from this is how we can create places where people can socially engage and interact, and it value, you know, makes your life more valuable. And I think that will be the crucial element. So, you know, we will still have offices, there's still demand for offices, but actually there may be not as many desks, but there'll be more meeting spaces where you can sit and chat, you know, using the public realm like on Bedford Place, where people can sit outdoors, can have a conversation, can have a coffee, feel safe. And I think that's really what we should be looking for.
Nick, some thoughts from you on what the city and industry can take away from this period.
For us and our developer clients, I think there is some uncertainty because people aren't quite sure what the demand is going to be for office space. But I think a lot of people I talk to, and we certainly see it as a really good opportunity to accelerate almost exponentially a lot of the things that we've been talking about for years in terms of creating nicer places for people to live and in terms of creating some decent quality new office space. That's been a drum that Gavin and I have been banging in the city for the last, I don't know how many years. But I genuinely think that tenants are going to change the way that we build things going forwards. I think from what we hear, tenants are going to be demanding different things from offices. As Gavin said, people are not going to be occupying at 1 person to 8 square meters, 1 to 7, 1 to 6, like they have been driving towards. It's probably going to go back to the old BCO, 1 in 10, maybe even 1 in 12 we're talking to people about. But they want different things. They want access to outdoor space. So communal roof terraces, etc. Going to be really interesting to see how designers and developers change their attitudes towards what they're going to build. You know, everyone knows that, and it was mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of the development in the city centre is 1 and 2 bed flats. But again, what we're hearing from agents and developers is people are now saying, actually, if I'm going to be in lockdown again, if I'm going to buy a flat, it's got to have a decent sized balcony. It's got to have access to good sized and amenity space, not just a little kind of paved area somewhere down near the back door. So I think that's going to be really interesting and in how Southampton can grasp those things, because it doesn't necessarily mean that those developments are going to cost more to build. But if we can get it right, it means that we'll steal a march on other cities and people will want to come and work and live here because we've got the right product that will attract them. And I think the one other biggest thing is I love the idea of sitting outside in Bedford Place and elsewhere. Absolutely fantastic. But let's learn the lessons of our neighbours from Europe, and let's make it easy for those cafes and restaurants to make those spaces more usable for longer in the year by putting up temporary awnings or whatever that is, so that you can still be sat out there mid-November, perhaps not with the gas heaters that kill the ozone layer, but some other more sustainable way of keeping the frost out. Because I do think that will lead to, as Gavin said, a much greater level of social interaction going forwards.
I think you're right. I think that's something to aim for. And Megan, I wonder if I can ask you just for some final thoughts then for today.
I think that social interaction aspect is really important. Certainly, I've seen a few different studies that looked at the opportunities for that collaboration and innovation, comparing business parks with more kind of creative, like traditional creative quarters, and just the difference in having public realm that invites people to bump into each other, to have conversations and things like that. You know, I think traditionally business parks have probably been great for creating space within a company, to have that space for collaboration. But I think what I've certainly seen, a lot of the work that the Business Improvement District, for instance, has been about creating opportunities for collaboration with other organizations. And that's something that I'd like to see a lot more of, and how we use our built environment and our space in order to give that opportunity.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great goal. Well, that's all we have time for on the first of today's panel discussions. So just remains for me to say thank you to our guests for sharing their time and their insights. Plenty more to come from EG and the Future of Southampton event today. So please do stay tuned. Thanks.